Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 884. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamita. What is up, good sir?
Not a heck of a luck, Kevin. Kevin, how about yourself?
Not a heck of a luck, Kevin. How about yourself?
Always a lot of wrestling during the weekday here at Stunt Granny HQ. And, sometimes not always the best things to report when you try to do a bi-weekly podcast. And with Payback and All Out behind us, it really seems like we got a week of NXT and AEW this week that was just kind of meh. And we also had tournaments on both shows.
Oh, yes. I gotta love those tournaments. Can't have enough tournaments.
Oh, it has been kind of wild how many tournaments we've had to endure here recently. I guess I'm still a little fascinated by, for whatever reason, the Heritage Cup Championship. I don't know why the style of match just stands out to me because they have rounds.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. That's really the only thing that stands out about them. I'm not super into this whole thing, so... it's just nothing that just... It could be more interesting, but what is the Heritage Cup?
Why is it important?
Why should we care?
Didn't
Noam Dar, like, win his second match back? Or something, lose his second match back for it or something, right after he created his new faction.
Well, it was weird that he was out for injury, but then he had Aura Mensah wrestle for him, and he lost it. And then everyone has kind of proceeded like Noam Dar actually lost it. It's that aspect of things is a little confusing. And honestly, that's one of those things that just that championship in general, all of the English or NXT UK crew speaks glowingly of that tournament. I'm gonna guess that a vast majority of us still haven't seen it and maybe needed a little more history on it before it, because it just kind of became a thing. You know, like, when Noam Dar came in, he just brought it with him. And though they've kind of explained the rules, and I feel like they've at least talked about the history a little bit, they've done such a good job with other video packages and other kind of backstory telling that I'm surprised that the ball got dropped on this one.
But it's just there to fill time. It really is what it's there for. I don't find it the most interesting thing. You were on the show. It's just kind of there. I don't have much more to say about it. It's just not that interesting.
Yeah, it's one where I almost considered, I'm like, are they really going to make me watch NXT Level Up? Because this is the first time I remember Vic pushing it as something to watch after SmackDown on Fridays.
Yeah, that's
on the show.
How do you watch Rampage? I think they're going to get you to watch Level Up.
It'd probably be more entertaining than Rampage.
Yeah, maybe.
So there's some mild consideration, but yeah, like they brought in some names like Butch for this tournament, but I don't really have much of a reason to care for it. Like, it is one of the things on NXT TV right now that, though I enjoy some of the parts of what's going on in it, like the metaphor faction cracks me up. Like, it's kind of so over the top that it makes me laugh. But this kind of gives them nothing to do in the meantime.
Yeah, no. They really don't. And I did see when they formed the metaphor, and it looked like it could be interesting, but there's just not been a lot of development there, and it's, just nothing really. You said nothing really happening with them, so it's kind of twisting out there.
Yeah, and that's why having an extremely lengthy tournament. I don't mind kind of mixing things up and going World Cup style, especially given, kind of the international nature of the championship anyway. But it makes it easy not to pay attention, too, because it almost lasts too long, even if you're pushing NXT level up or whatever it is to have. Because I feel like one of the matches or a couple of the matches have... Well, one might have taken place already on there, and one is going to take place, I believe. So that kind of helps speed things up, but the horizon for this event is kind of long. I mean, I can get into the World Cup stuff without a problem, but this one, yeah, it's definitely not my favorite programming on NXT at the current moment. One thing that I have enjoyed and got expanded on even more this week, Thea Hale turning into the bad girl at school.
Oh, I love this. This is probably my favorite. Everything that they're doing in NXT right now. She's smoking in the girls' room with JC Jane. Yes. It's beautiful. I love it so much.
Yeah.
I mean, I want more of this.
It really feels like they're trying to do they've done a lot of back to school themes for this Chase U faction, and someone falling into the quote-unquote wrong group is just right up that alley.
It really is. It's super fun. I'm enjoying it a lot.
So, yeah, that one, we got a little bit of development on that one this week, and I'm sure it will keep on moving as things go along. And, I guess there is some weird interplay here going on. Because Gigi Dolin and Blair Davenport were both involved in this matchup.
Yeah.
But, man, just Gigi still seems way out of place.
Yes.
As a baby face.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, once the JC Jane feud was over, there really wasn't, and that cage match was awesome. I really liked that match. But after that, Gigi has especially been kind of just putting a wind out there, nothing really going on. Or JC Jane at least now has found something. But they both definitely feel like they need to move on from NXT, and it's just not happening. But once again, on her own, I don't know.
No.
Yeah, just like her own, I'm not sure what her role does in NXT. She's losing. She's there to lose more than she wins.
Yeah, she might have really overcome the feud itself, but it doesn't feel like she overcame it, honestly, in actual terms.
No, there's really nothing left for her since. Props to NXT for having non-title storylines going on.
non-title women's storylines going on.
No.
But, I don't know what kind of mileage you really get from Gigi Dolin and Blair Davenport. It's not something that's going to make
Gigi Dolin and Blair Davenport. It's not something that's going to make
That's going to make a No Mercy or any special event like that. It's really just a TV feud that's probably going to fizzle out in a month or less.
I don't feel like this is going to make it to whatever their next premium live event is. Because I feel like they kind of talked about it, but I in no way remember what it was. So, yeah, she's... I mean, I guess the only thing you can want to see is more of an actual singles run, but they just have, I mean, that's the only thing bad about Thea Hale turning into Bad Girl is that it seems like they have more than Bad Girls on that roster. They almost have a baby face problem down there.
Yeah. No, I mean, they just, you know what? It's been a problem throughout the history of NXT.
They just keep
too many women. It's just, I mean, it can be nice at times, but other times it's just like,
you know,
what's Roxanne doing around sticking around for a feud with Kiana Jones? What's Gigi Dolin doing sticking around for a feud with Blair Davenport?
It's not completely exclusive to the women,
because I can also ask, What the hell is Braun Breaker doing sticking around for a feud with Van Wagner?
one feels more like, just feel like he needs, like, at this point, it feels like they just want him to have more seasoning.
But how do you get seasoning when you're always wrestling people with experience than you?
And you're only two years in yourself.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess you learn from each other.
I guess the match, you know, what it was really. The ending was quite funny, even though it wasn't funny, supposed to be funny. Even though the steps really did. Hit Von Wagner and split him open pretty good. So it was definitely a weird decision to do the cutaway deal because it almost made you think that.
The cutaway was going to absolutely look like garbage.
But apparently, really split with the steps.
I was just like. I was trying to figure out if something actually went wrong or not with the way they did it, because having it black out but still have audio made me feel like it was on purpose.
Yeah, no, I mean, of course it was on purpose, and you know, you had villains up and all that. That part was well done.
Honestly, the part that amused me most was Baron Corbin cackling about it on commentary.
That was funny. I've seen some still photos and videos of the aftermath, and he has no idea what he just witnessed. He's just shocked. It was a fun moment. Why angle with Von Wagner? I mean, first of all, both guys are heels. Second of all, no one cares about Von Wagner. Like, do it with somebody people actually, you know, care about?
Well, it's always weird where you feel like something like that is when one guy kind of outpowers the other and you're supposed to feel bad for the guy whose head is getting crushed. But it's kind of hard to feel bad for the bigger guy in the situation. The only thing I did kind of feel bad about, just from a sell standpoint, I really thought that, Wagner puts him through a table, brings him in, and does his finisher on him, but then Braun Breaker can just crotch him out of nowhere?
And that felt like they were running out of time.
That part kind of caught me off a little bit.
And they needed to rush through the finish.
That would not surprise me. That main event started kind of late, even by NXT standards. So, yeah, I don't know why you run that angle, honestly. Like you said, like, it's still kind of odd. I do feel like people are kind of starting to get behind Von Wagner, but there's still not that much there.
Yeah, there really is no there with Wagner, and Bron Breakker is just again, he's losing shine every week he stays in NXT. And it's beyond time to do something with him. To just take him, you know, put him on Raw or SmackDown, put him on the house shows against veterans, build, just kind of get the build up for him, and just, you don't trust him anything major right away, but... Let's start the evolution going here, and there's just... He's not as familiar in NXT. He's champion, he's lost title, he lost the match for the title. There's nothing else really for him to do here.
I mean, it was kind of been the case, like, honestly, ever since he turned heel, like, okay, maybe this was his last test. He's been a babyface the whole time. Maybe they want to see how this works out. Well, they've done a good job getting people to boo him, you know, and he's kind of been that cocky, arrogant athlete kind of character.
Yeah, no, he feels like a dangerous guy. They have, from what I've seen, done a good job with him as a heel. As you were saying, there's a babyface problem in NXT, and there's also a smallish babyface problem in NXT, so there's not too many people you can really put against Bron Breakker. Not that it hasn't stopped him. I mean, obviously they got two matches of him and Mello, but
yeah, you're definitely talking exception to rule when you're talking about Carmelo as far as the smaller. Smaller wrestlers go, so. Cause yeah, I mean, even some of the only other guy that they've done a good job with still was in the second match. Ilya Dragunov, they've done a really good job of keeping him in contention. I feel like they've given him good bounce back wins after he's taken some of these. I don't know if you want to call them signature losses, but definitely higher profile losses.
They do a good job with him. His match with Carmelo was the last NXT special was probably the best NXT match of the entire year, and I don't know if I have my doubts that we're going to finish with anything being better than that match. So that was really good.
The Dayton connection always has me pulling for Wesley. Plus, I guess I do feel like he's... I kind of enjoyed him in the Rascals way back in Impact Wrestling. And, you know, I think that maybe he has a ceiling on the main roster. But who knows, you know? They're definitely getting... They've done a good job with him of building him up over the past year since a tag team partner got released. But I wouldn't be surprised, I guess, to see him have a little bit of tea. Because this really isn't the time of the year to call people. Yes, that's the other reason I don't really see that happening too much. For anyone, you know, even the likes of Bron Breakker. Yeah. Any call up before the this week would be a surprise to me.
I don't think we're going to get any. If we didn't get a mass exodus from NXT to the main roster at SummerSlam, it's not coming in the remainder of 2023. It may not come until after WrestleMania next year. I mean, a few will probably end up in the Royal Rumble, but that doesn't necessarily ever mean that, you know, that they're sticking around.
No.
Raw or SmackDown, oftentimes means that they're going right back.
Yep, sometimes they just need extra bodies to freshen up the 30-person count. I feel like the women end up getting a few more spots than the men, just by virtue of how many women are usually on the NXT roster to start with. So, yeah, Dronoff. Who else? I guess is on the babyface legend NXT. The other one that I'm thinking of that had a spot in the show was Nathan Frazier. I'm kind of surprised by how much I like his promos and his little kind of like SNL inspired talk show that he does. Feel like he's sitting at the news desk at SNL. But yeah, they do not do a great job of letting them win. Especially, you know, I mean, he was the one that coughed up the Heritage Cup championship to Noam Dar to start with. So, yeah, I mean, he's one that that might have some type of shot. They have a lot of kind of small, like, at this point, by the way, I don't know what to say about Abacado. Like, why is he even on that roster?
I have no idea.
I don't know why they haven't given up on him and just sent him on his way. There's
The fact that he lost to Tyler Bate in under 3 minutes is wild.
Yeah, I mean, you cannot have a guy that size on your roster and do that with him. It's just, you know,
it's just too silly.
You know, they didn't build anything up. It's not, you know, you can't have a 7-foot job on your roster. It just doesn't work. It's not impressive to beat it.
No. As much as the announcers can try to sell that, it does not do you a whole lot of good when everyone beats the guy. It's kind of wild. You know, I guess it's better to be like, what's his name, there on the main completely gone than on TV and losing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's another one I think they're gonna have to make a decision about.
Yeah, I mean, if he hasn't been trained at some juncture at this point, or at least trained to your satisfaction, we seem to be getting to shit or get off the pot kind of territory with him. So, yeah, poor Abacado just cannot get anything going. Have you liked the reinvention of Mustafa Ali, the dickhead heel? But again, another heel character.
Yeah, it's fine. He plays a heel, but once again, it's another one that's just like, what are you going to do with this guy? Like, it feels like the moment has more than passed. To get anything really that much out of him. And there was a moment where you could have. There were moments where you could have. But now it just feels like, there's just nothing to this guy. I don't, he's getting the title shot against Dominic when they're both dastardly heels. That doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, it's kind of weird because, I guess it makes in some level of sense. I feel like I've been telling the story that Dominic's trying to dodge Dragon Lee. That ends up giving you one dead match, though, with Dominic.
Yeah.
You know, like, to accomplish one thing, you're kind of screwing yourself in the present for some reason, instead of finding two baby faces maybe to fight each other and then have things turn up. And then just to kind of continue on the heel on heel side of things, honestly, the opening match, Tiffany Stratton versus Kiana James, I feel like Kiana James can have a job in the WWE for quite some time. I don't think she's the flashiest talent that they have down there. She more than I did not expect her to win that match, but I still feel like she's kind of delivered both on the mic and in the ring when she's been called upon.
She's definitely some upside there. Definitely someone that they need to take their time to bring along. There's nothing but good things in there.
Yeah. So, and I guess moving along at this point then, because I feel like that covers. Well,
there's a major plot point that took place after that match.
I guess that should be talked about. because it did happen at Payback. Tiffany Stratton was at Payback. She was a bit nonchalant about the man there and made a sly comment about, Becky Lynch, who has never, in fact, won Women's NXT Championship. So Miss Lynch took it upon herself to challenge Tiffany Stratton next week.
Yes, she did. That is definitely an interesting turn of events, not having that match on.
A premium live event.
On the upcoming No Show or
anything of that sort.
It's just going to be one week after the announcement. Here we go. Here it is. Becky Lynch is coming to NXT, which definitely they play for ratings. They want those NXT ratings up so that they can get their big packaged rights fees and not lose anything. Not that I'm thinking about USA being unhappy with NXT. You know what NXT is going to be. It's not going to be huge.
It's there to fill a slot.
A few ratings can help out with things and bring and some major WWE superstars
to NXT every once in a while.
Definitely can spike those numbers. I mean, it's different than
Ali or Dana Brooke or even Baron Corbin, being at NXT. The man will come around to NXT, and it is a very, very interesting match because
I struggle to see how Becky can win or lose.
I'm really confused about how they're going to go about this. Because Tiffany Stratton has done a good job of distancing herself from pretty much anyone on the NXT roster and having any friends. So there's no natural, like, oh, X is going to help her cheat the win. And then Becky Lynch can, you know, hang her hat on that. So it's a little bit confusing, and you don't really, like, I guess it would help her resume to have the NXT championship on there, but why at this point? Like, I mean, you have literally main evented WrestleMania, so winning the NXT championship really should not be on your list, your to-do list. You know, like, you have conquered mountains that are far higher. This really does not do a whole lot for you.
There's no one she's currently feuding with to interfere. Because Becky wasn't even out on it at all.
So
they started nothing new with her.
Unless they
want to do a quick turnaround Monday to Tuesday.
Yeah. Yeah, because even Zoe Stark seemed to move on to Trish as an opponent if that happens.
I don't see that happening.
I think Trish is gone.
But yeah, I don't think... I don't think... going to see round two or three or whatever it is of Becky versus Zoe.
No, we're not going to get that. And the only person who threatened Becky recently was Shayna, but it feels like they've dropped that, and we're actually going to get Shayna and Zoe as a tag team based on their mutual respect for each other, that they beat out of each other.
Oh. They definitely need to find something for those two to do because they seem to be struggling singles. Competitors. So, putting them in the tag team is probably for the best.
So once again, Becky Lynch not having anything worthwhile to do. Before being put in a feud with Rhea Ripley, it has been a story in recent times. They dragged that first feud out 6 months. Excellent conclusion. A little bumpy along the way, but now there's absolutely nothing for her to do. And it's, this feels like a one and done deal. I don't, once again, see. Maybe you get a screw finish to get the no mercy. But that no mercy you have to deliver the decisive finish.
That just feels like you're stringing out the inevitable. Unless again you maybe have some plan to pull in some help for Tiffany Stratton, which again still does not seem great for her character. You know, it really doesn't seem in her character's vein to be requesting help. But hey, I mean, they've kind of figured that out before, so who knows? Maybe you can come up with a good storyline reason for that to happen. So, if NXT then, now that Becky Lynch got thrown in there.
Yes.
That leaves us with Dynamite. AEW Dynamite, sir. This one... especially after two consecutive pay-per-views, one of which we did not watch. Oof, I always feel like there's a down week for AEW after a pay-per-view. After back-to-back pay-per-views, yep, a little bit of a down week this week for AEW.
You know, I mean, I didn't actively dislike a lot of the show. It was just kind of there. Somehow it feels like they're doing a better job promoting Grand Slam, which is going to be on TV, but they do have to try to move as many tickets as possible for that.
It feels like they're promoting
Grand Slam better than their last two pay-per-views as something important. Of course, we gotta have another tournament, and we got a popular. We got to do two things for the tournament. We got to populate a top contenders tournament for the World Heavyweight Championship with a bunch of guys who haven't won in God knows how long. And then we have to telegraph the winner the whole time.
these things do happen sometimes. AEW, not always the best at being subtle. That is for sure.
It's so unnecessary. Creative things AEW's done.
You know what? It's one of the more impressive creative things AEW's done in a while.
A moment between the interview segment and physicality on Dynamite.
People want to see MJF versus Samoa Joe. It really was that simple.
But we got to go through this whole tournament rigmarole.
And I guess there's maybe a possibility that Joe will find his way out of the tournament somehow. Maybe getting disqualified. So Roderick Strong gets the title match. So that then Joe can get the title match. On pay per view, maybe. That's the only way Joe's not winning this thing.
I mean, they didn't plant seeds. They planted, like, a full tree right in front of you.
Yeah, they really did. Once again, just make the match. Just make the MJF Samoa Joe match. Yes, it's weird that Samoa Joe just lost to CM Punk and now he's getting a world title match, but I'll give them the benefit of the doubt that they had to move some things around and make some changes. And this is actually a change for the better. A change for the good. I really do want to look forward to seeing MJF and Samoa Joe, and I hope they do it on free TV, because once again, I'm not buying an AEW pay-per-view for a very long time. Or at least they get some consistency going.
That is fair enough. Because it's been a little bit rough.
Now, from what I've heard, All Out was a phenomenal show, and the show we probably shouldn't have, even though there wasn't that stuff, obviously, from lack of a marquee match. I mean, heard nothing but great things about Omega and Orange Cassidy. That's a match we'd be raving about for weeks and weeks.
They definitely put that on the wrong show.
Well, apparently, Mox, as a singles champion, wrestling on TV regularly.
Taking a little bit of a break from
bleeding in every match, instead being in situations where he is not taking the punishment, he's dishing out the punishment.
No.
And being dominant. And violent.
Against other people.
And that just being a masochist to his own body. That's the Moxley I enjoy. And of course, every once in a while, someone actually challenges him, and that's when he can bleed a gusher.
That's fine too.
But this is the Mox I enjoy.
Yeah, the man actually knows how to wrestle.
Yes.
Might make fun of him beating in matches a whole lot. But I'm with you. Like, all of his world championship reign, he was wrestling.
Of course, he was
maybe
faced through that whole ordeal. And once again, he was matched for more 50-50. But once again, I love Moxley's singles championship match. He really does rise to the occasion in those situations.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, he shockingly... I mean, I kind of laughed when I read just some dumb message board comment that hit my in-mail inbox about there being no one to draw in AEW now that CM Punk is gone. And I'm like, I'm in for, like you said, like I'm in for Jon Moxley for the most part.
Yeah.
Like, as long as he keeps himself out of the death matches, he's definitely a draw for me. Like, he's not been that much different of a character than he was in the WWE.
No, he really isn't. That's kind of a funny part of everything. Jon Moxley is not that different from Dean Ambrose. Maybe AEW asked him to do less goofy things or what have you.
I understand why the stupid turn against Seth
the very night Roman Reigns announced that he had cancer was the last straw for him. Because that was just awful. And the follow-up was awful. But I don't really see the huge difference in his portrayal or how he carries himself. And the mannerisms, it really is basically the same.
Yeah, like I'm with you that I think he does a little less goofy stuff. He has a little more straightforward promo style, I think, in AEW.
Yeah, he definitely does. He's very good here. Putting maybe a little bit of the Black Bull comedy, Orange Cassidy, now he's tasted his own blood, not ready to be more serious, not fully losing Orange Cassidy, you could absolutely build to that. Or you could move Orange Cassidy on to the TNT title, you could move on to the world title. There's any number of things you could do here. AEW has the roster. John Moxley with a single champ title, defending the best, like every week on TV, was a major part of the best times of AEW. So let's go back to what works.
Yeah, it's kind of funny that Jon Moxley works and they refuse to stay in the Jon Moxley business, or at least they let him run off. All too often. So yeah, him being involved in the singles division, it just will help out everyone in general. CM Punk or no CM Punk, honestly, you know, I just think that they're in a better spot with him being a singles wrestler. So yeah, there is definitely that stuff. There is the tournament. I guess you brought his name up. Any chance that, well, you kind of mentioned Roderick Strong maybe has a chance at winning this tournament. He does have a pretty good running story going with MJF and Adam Cole, so that would not be a complete shock.
Yeah, no, I mean, you could do that. MJF versus Roderick Strong as a TV match and save Joe for pay-per-view. It's just I'm totally not, totally understanding the tone here. That new render graphic of Ryder Strong with the neck brace looking like the biggest dork in the world. I'm up for some comedy, but this guy is in certain points with the main storyline and the World Heavyweight Champion. Are we supposed to take him seriously or not?
Yeah, that's the time when you try to treat someone seriously. Like, it did seem like a weird spot to be doing the goofy neck brace.
But again, there's a lot of comedy in the MJF Adam Cole relationship and this whole story. And once again, you could argue that
the world title being involved,
it does diminish the world title. I mean, they could do all of this that they're doing without MJF still being world champion. Throughout it.
Yeah. I mean, that could have been done.
Once again, what they did with MJF and Samoa Joe was really good. Samoa Joe, at this stage of his career, and his weight, all of his injuries, still being able to walk through a curtain and project an element of, Oh my God, someone's gonna get their ass. It really is amazing. I really gotta give Joe his props. It wasn't that long ago. We thought his career was over, and now it's obvious he's got some life left. He can still turn it on. He can still be that Samoa Joe, the ass kick Samoa Joe. Maybe he's not as smooth as he used to, but he still carries that element of dangerous Samoa Joe. Always did a really good job.
The only other person in all of wrestling who has a greater sense of danger when he walks through a curtain nowadays is Brock Lesnar. For Samoa Joe to even be in that air, it's pretty incredible. Yes, you're talking about someone who legitimately could beat up most people and putting him in that territory. So... You know, that is pretty rare air to be up there. And yeah, Samoa Joe, like you said, he delivers. Like, he always carries himself very, very well and like a badass. And honestly, it's helped too that it's the one thing that he learned from the WWE is that he doesn't need to scream all the time to get his point across and be a badass. Like, he can keep it toned down, but still aggressive. So, and he's definitely carried that into this AEW run. Or ROH run, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, it's fighting all this with football, carrying the Ring of Honor television championship, and, of course... Any matches that he loses, the title's just not on the line, and then he just goes back to being Ring of Honor television champion. But it's Samoa Joe. It's definitely That was definitely the best part of Dynamite, without a doubt. And the two do seem to have some chemistry. I think this, you almost don't want it to be more than one and done. You get some mileage out of it. So maybe you do have Joe. You think yourself disqualified in one of his tournament matches. You don't want him to lose. But you could maybe drag this out. I don't know. They've already got another pay-per-view off. Hulk Hogan first, and it's just going to be like, they're just going to get past, Grand Slam, and then they're going to have to go immediately to promoting a pay-per-view a week and a half later. AEW was supposed to be the company that was 3 months between pay-per-views. What's happening here?
Trying to make more money is like every other company is what happened here.
That's very true. Go get that money. Apparently, somehow All still did at least 100,000 buys. Coming a week after All In. So they have a captive audience of at least 100,000 people that apparently will watch paint dry. If it's got the logos on it on the wall.
I feel like you had to be pretty hardcore to get that one. I don't know what numbers All In did honestly on pay per view.
Supposedly, if you counted all the late buys, because obviously it's an afternoon show. It might break AEW's record.
I mean, I would be one of those late buys, I suppose. I did not pre-purchase.
I mean, later that night or in days afterwards.
Oh, I still don't get that. I still don't get paying full price for something the next day. But that's for that's for another podcast. I guess another thing that did happen and was kind of interesting, more in the promo department here, Swerve Strickland getting involved with one Adam Hangman Page this week.
That was another really, really, really good segment. I really liked it a lot. Swerve has another guy who is just able to project himself as being just this nasty, mean person guy, who could be dangerous as well. It's not the point saying it's always Joe, but definitely. He definitely comes off very offensive. You believe that he comes from where he says he comes from, and seeing what he's seen, and all of that.
And then he'll do anything that he needs to do to get the win.
You definitely see that in him, and they absolutely do need to get a fire lit up. They're trying to make it sound like it's all Adam Page's fault.
He at least needs a warming up, yes, if nothing
been,
else.
He has been fourth fiddle to the elite for months and months. It was nice when the elite got back together and all that. But then it just became a whole thing where they were all like, sacrificing their individual careers all the time. Hangman's had a rough year. He found himself in the middle of this whole punk thing, not some of it on himself with his own words, but it feels like it has negatively affected him in a way that it probably shouldn't have, all told, and not having a banner year after everything they did to get the AEW title on him, and you know, that maybe, you know, there's an argument for, you know, peak period of the company. It's, you know, I know Punk came in, Danielson came in, but him finally winning the Tiny Omega was right up there in those moments that I think really made that, you know, 2021 to, you know, 2020.
Summer, you know, fall 2021 to middle of 2022, probably the peak of AEW, really. He has fallen off, and he's going to the drama and everything, the guy almost
He'd rather, you know, give all this up and go back to teaching and just live a regular life.
It really does not help that he's just around bigger personalities all the time, too. You know, like, he has his own persona, his own look. Like, he doesn't look like the Young Bucks. He doesn't look like Kenny Omega. Although I'm kind of considering that, as they both kind of have long blonde stringy hair, but you know, they both kind of have a different to them, and they definitely have different sensibilities to them. But yeah, he's like, well, you said it, the fourth fiddle. Like, he's the fourth guy in that group.
Yeah, you know.
You got the founders of AEW, and then the other guy.
He can definitely fall.
When he's with them, he can definitely fall
onto other guys' status. I think somebody had, like, a stat that he hadn't actually had a singles match on Dynamite since February or something crazy like that. He was looked at as a future. You know, when Billy was really, you know, hitting the ground running in Ring of Honor and New Japan, and when AEW was formed, he was
in Ring of Honor in Japan, and when AEW was formed, he was.
He was supposed to be the future, and, you know, title reign, it came, it went, you know, it had its ups and downs, and then he's just been kind of on a down trajectory for the last year. So I don't know exactly how long this feud lasts. It's just something for, you know, and obviously he's going to face Brian Cage next week and win. That's
feud is going to last. It's just something for, you know,
I think they can do some good things. Yeah, Swerve definitely seems ready for bigger and better things with what he's done with some lesser feuds recently. And reheating Adam Page, who's definitely more of a name, at least within the AEW sphere, is a good step, I feel like, for him.
And speaking of those lesser names,
given his previous track,
Nick Wayne was in the main event. This week. That match was not good. And once again, this schmaltzy, oh my god, look at how emotional they are about fighting each other. And oh, Darby wants Nick Wayne to give him his pass. Oh god, gag me with that shit.
The kid's
green as grass.
It's gonna be rough anyway, and then
you put him in this storyline where he is just a fucking underdog who never wins. I actually hope that they do go through with him. I think that might be the best way to do things to him, because just being this fucking underdog and babyface is not gonna cut it.
Well, yeah, it almost reminds me of the situation that, to me, helped out in AEW. Like, Julia Hart was not going to do anything with Griff Garrison and newly NXT'd, what's his name, Brian Pillman Jr. So, having her turn heel and go with the Black House of Black, kind of forgot how much black stuff was running around AEW. It gave her a character. It gave her something to sink into. And, just... Because that's, Christian is just so hilarious these days. I mean, he's such a dickhead.
Yeah, he's just such a dick. It's awesome. It's hilarious how him and Don Callis are the only people getting... Seemingly, him, Don Callis, and Dominic are the only people getting real heat. Wrestling anymore.
And Christian just going, you know what? I was wrong about your father. He was even worse than I thought. I was just like, and to just have that person team up with that guy, I just think that there's something for character-driven changes that, that will help out in that department.
Yeah, it definitely would.
Plus you give the kid a real built-in mentor. Darby Allin's still too young of a guy in my book to be anyone's mentor, even though there's real life to their relationship, and Sting's not there every week to get anything, I don't think he sees that as his job at all. But Christian's the type of guy who probably would, but just, you know, take the kid under his wing, and, you know, I mean, they can do some funny stuff, you know, with him calling Christian dad or whatever.
Oh. Yes, to have someone truly subservient to Christian instead of, you know, weird dinosaur guy that that happens to be his co-worker. I think could have some real potential to it.
And, you know, speaking of questions, Christian, since we're on the subject, if Edge really does make his way to AEW, and basically have to be babyface from the start, and I don't think it really turn Edge edgy. If Christian are going to interact, it will be as Edge the babyface and Christian as this character. Because you really can't just flip that switch and get Christian, you know, as a babyface. or maybe Edge will try to be a heel in AEW, so him and Christian could have matches with FTR and the Young Bucks, and, you know, before he calls it a career, or they both call it a career, really. Because you kind of think that's a good chunk of what they want to do.
I hadn't really thought about this aspect of things with Edge possibly coming to AEW. Is he going to go by Sexton Hardcastle?
That's a question. I imagine he'll just call himself Adam Copeland or something of the sort. Maybe he'll call himself No BS Adam Copeland.
No BS Adam Copeland. Who knows?
I suppose that is a possibility.
I kind of rethought that. You know, maybe Edge will try to be a heel in AEW alongside Christian, so they can have those tag. Matches.
That would be a really fun use for is. As much as they try to play up the poor Hardys as being this classic tag team, both of them are completely beat up from
years, and they never really went away for very long, so there's nothing really fresh for them. No, it's not the right. It's physically over for both.
It's over, man.
You know, man. To the point with Jeff Hardy, where no one wants to see him wrestling anymore. Fans of his just want to see him go be a family man and stay away from all these triggers that set off his alcoholism and his drug addiction. And Matt Hardy's just kind of a dick. the way he tweets and puts himself out there and gets himself in the middle of all the other drama in AEW. There's a lot of people who believe that Matt Hardy is the true lead behind all the negative information behind CM Punk stuff, and it would not surprise me in one bit.
His tweets do get a little bit weird because, like, I don't like the person that he's usually responding to or the comment that's been made to start with. But it's just like, dude, you're not really dunking on him the right way. Like,
he's not a witty person. He doesn't have that in him. We saw that when he came back from the WWF after the Lita fiasco and just absolutely torched him on the microphone. He goes into battles of wits on Arn to begin with, and he just comes off very insecure, very insecure, really the best word for it.
So even if he's I'm kind of on his side, he just really doesn't do himself any favors with his tone. And, you know, like you said, like, half the situations, it doesn't even feel like he should be involved in. It's just like, why are you involved in this? Like,
this has no bearing on you whatsoever. The biggest reason is they're just physically shot. That people just groan at the Hardys at this point. But Edge and Christian, Christian doesn't wrestle very often. He's got this persona that's really gotten over.
And then Edge has some really good matches left in him.
You know, in real life, Edge is very close to FDR. I'm sure they love Edge. And Christian would love to have a match, at least one match with the Young Bucks before they call it a day. Yeah, they haven't teamed up in over a decade. I think they only briefly came back to have tag team matches before Edge retired the first time. I think they had gotten back together on television.
But as far as a tag team run, it's been about 20 years.
It's probably more. So, you know, to have them do that, interact with
teams, I think they absolutely should do that. Yeah, that would be something that I do think that they can control that a little bit better in AEW.
But I still think it'll be interesting
with the fans, I guess. Like, they definitely didn't want to boo him in the WWE, but in a different promotion under a different name, I feel that has more potential to work than I would than anything else, I guess. The WWE heel stuff was just cringy.
For Edge.
Because people just did not want to boo him. But I think that, the AEW crowd is different enough that it might get pulled off. And I agree with you. Like, it'd be kind of fun. Like, it's really has been a really long time since they've been heels and tag team together. So, cool, man. It would be something fresh, and we have not had that for quite some time. That'd be fun. Anything else talking about? Beer.
Well, I think there's one thing we could talk about.
How are you liking Chris Jericho having his own knockoff version of AEW's top storyline?
Let's break it with his storyline, Guevara. it's so obvious that that's what he's doing. He does have his own version of MJF and Adam Cole on the same show.
On the same show.
For some reason, maybe just because they've had a longer history, I hadn't thought about it being the same thing. You are correct, though. Like, it is a very similar situation. And it's kind of felt lame since Jump Street, honestly, because you're bringing back up a feud that has already happened. You know, and Sammy Guevara didn't get a rub from it. I'm just kind of tapped out on Jericho.
It's just so transparent, the things he's doing to just keep himself relevant. And it's just, you probably do need to go away for a while, and then, how much a while does the guy have left to So I see his side there of why he doesn't want to just go away for six months and then try to come back again because it might not be there after that. But there's not much left right now. He has run through the AEW roster pretty good as far as any kind of match that would work for him.
Yeah, and it was something that you said there that I hadn't thought that much of. Jeremy and I haven't talked in a long while. This is hands down the longest Jericho has been around any wrestling promotion in 15 years.
He has not had
an extended break.
He has had a couple of month off here or something like that, some kind of smaller breaks. But in the WWE, he'd be gone for 3-4 months at a time. He's like, oh, I'm going touring, I'm out the whole time. Now it's like, oh, hey, I'm touring, but I'm also gonna be here at Dynamite this week. And it's just like, okay.
He'd be gone for years at a time at various points. We're talking about the mid-2000s, he went away, came back, stayed about another three years uninterrupted, and then after that it's been never spent a year anywhere. Well, not WWE until the New Japan opportunity that eventually birthed the AEW opportunity.
I do not think that that's helping him at all.
No, it really isn't. And once again, it's so transparent how desperate he is to stay relevant. And who he leeches off of for that. The problem is, for him right now, the people he's leeching after. Sammy Guevara isn't over at all.
And that's just not helping. Like, he's another guy that I understand in a lot of ways why they had him in the Four Pillars conversation. Because he was one of those young stars that you thought was really going to blossom in AEW. Or at least I guess there was the potential of that happening.
Yeah.
And if you don't get the rub from Chris Jericho the first time that you beat him in a feud, the second time isn't going to be any better, especially when... I mean, he still come off as a weenie during that whole Four Pillars feud. He didn't get a bump from it at all.
That didn't do anything for anybody. Darby came out of it fairly unscathed, but
yes.
Jack Perry is in a really bad way right now. lot from his own actions, but, you know, things weren't going swimmingly, you know, before that either. Sammy Guevara was the most exposed and the most hurt by that whole thing. Because, you know, playing off of MJF, he had no charisma to do so. None of them did, but, you know, the other two were kind of baby faces, so it didn't hurt as much. Him being kind of a black hole sink of charisma, you know, playing off of MJF, that really exposed him.
Oh, man. So, to run through Jericho here for time off, it was like 2000 to 2005, I want to say here. 99 to 2005 in WWE. Came back 2007 to 2010.
Okay, that's about 3 rounds.
And then second return to WWE 2011 to 2018 and 2022.
But there were breaks in between that.
Yeah.
2011 to 2018.
Because it is saying various sporadic feuds 2014 to 2016. So, yeah. That 2011 to 2018 was broken up by, you know, other absences like we were already talking about.
Yeah, the 2016 to 2017 run was probably the longest he'd had otherwise, and that was, I think, him sticking around longer because the Kevin Owens storyline. Once again, very similar to what he's doing right now. Because he is chasing that high. He wants to recreate the Festival of Friendship every single week on television. That's what he wants to do.
Oh, well, he's going to be chasing that for, let's just say, roughly the rest of his career, if that is truly his goal.
And the funny thing is, Adam Cole and MJF have accomplished the closest anyone ever will.
Yes.
Getting there. And I think that drives Jericho to... It probably does drag Jericho a little crazy.
Oh my gosh.
I figured Jericho's team out. He's actually jealous that they've taken they've taken his thing.
They stole my gimmick, damn it. Oh man. So, yeah, honestly, this is the longest run that Jericho's had since 2007 to 2010 in WWE.
It's longer.
Yeah, and it's longer. So, yeah, that's quite something to take a decade later to have your longest run after that time. So, yeah, I am not enjoying this, and that's the other thing, like, Guevara is not likable.
No, he's not. He is one of the most punchable faces I've ever seen in my entire life.
Yeah, like...
But it also doesn't translate greatly to him being a heel with actual heat, instead of, you know, someone you just want to see go away, you just want off of your television completely.
yes. More go away heat than, heel heat.